Hello, thanks so much for tuning in, listeners. My name's Jamie. I use he, him pronouns, and you're listening to the Proper Full On Gay Podcast. I almost forgot the show's name there, the Proper Full On Gay Podcast, that show where we talk about Heartstopper and take inspiration from what happens to the characters to talk about what life is like for queer young people today. I am absolutely thrilled to bits to be joined by another super guest from LGBT Scotland. Hello, Bryony.
Hi, I'm Bryony. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm really excited to be here today.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you with us. Listeners, you're in for a treat. This is an LGBT in Scotland double bill. We had Paula last week. We've got Bryony this time. And we're here to talk about episode three, Promise. It's such a great episode.
I love the whole season, but I think this episode was one of my favorite episodes, just because of all the moments in it and just like really seeing kind of school dynamic there as well. So yeah, I really loved this episode.
It was really good. It was really good. Before we get into it, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and LGBT Scotland, just in case people didn't hear your last episode with us?
So LGBT Scotland is a charity. We work with 13 to 25 year olds, providing support, things like a live chat line, and we also work with schools and organisations to raise awareness around about LGBT identities and what the needs of LGBT people are. So my job is primarily working with primary and secondary schools on LGBT inclusive education and talking to them about what the needs of LGBTQ young people are within schools.
And do you work primarily with students in schools, or do you work with teachers too?
Primarily with teachers. I do a lot of training with teachers, talking about what are the needs of young people. So we do a lot of consultation with young people about what would you like teachers to know more about, and then we deliver lessons and training based on that feedback. So I do lots of school visits, going out and talking to teachers about here's what we can do to have queer spaces and safe classrooms for LGBTQ young people.
It sounds great. It must be so rewarding to do that kind of work and really see the difference that you make in schools.
Oh, it's so rewarding, and it's the best when I can go out to schools and actually meet some of the young people and talk about what impact this has had on them. And also just seeing how different it is now in schools compared to even when I was at school. I was only at school like 11 years ago, and it was so different. There was no queer representation at all.
Yeah.
So just talking to them about how they've got these clubs and safe spaces and books and classes, it's incredible, and I'm so glad that we are at that place. Even though there's so much more to do, I'm so glad there's so much progress that's been made already.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. You make it sound so great. I can't believe it. It sounds so good. I wish that kind of stuff had been around whenever I was at school back in the 90s. That's how long ago that was. But we'll move swiftly on. As I said, you're listening to the Proper Full On Gay Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram, listener, if you just go to at Proper Full On Gay Podcast on Instagram. You can give us a follow. If you want to get in touch and tell us what you thought about episode three, you can pop us an email to properfullongaypodcast@gmail.com. On Spotify, you can look down at your phone, you can give us a 5-star rating. We would be really grateful. And on Apple Podcasts too. In Spotify in particular, you can send us a voice note, or you can add a little comment right to the episode to let us know what you think. While you're there, hit that subscribe button right now. It takes 2 seconds and it makes a huge difference to us. We would really appreciate it. Should we talk about Heartstopper, Bryony?
Yes, I'd love to.
Ooh, our first scene is one that I picked. So yeah, I should tell the listeners what format we follow in case they haven't tuned in before. So how we do it is, like, in advance, I ask guests to pick their top moments and I pick my top moments, and then we kind of jumble it all up and it falls out of the tree, whatever way it falls out of the tree. That doesn't even make sense. Oh my God. So we end up with a list of really great moments from the show. This list is super long. Like, there's so much in this episode that we both loved. The first moment is one that I picked. We pick up right where we left off in episode two. And we head to Mr. O'Shea's art room, where Tao and Isaac and Charlie are planning Tao's date. They're giving him a bit of support. I'm planning the date with him. I really love how much has changed in Mr. O'Shea's art room, even though it's just been a few weeks since the story left off in the last time that we were here. There are loads of beautiful flowers in the tree, and the windows look like another Under the Sea moment's happening. And some of the students have created like a cardboard city in the background. Like, it looks so good.
Yeah, I love the scenes in the classroom. I think it's so beautiful, and you can tell that young people have had loads of involvement in creating that safe space within that classroom, which is
Yeah,
so lovely.
it is. It's really nice. Our trio of young people are here to plan Tao and Elle's perfect date. Let's have a listen to their conversation.
A restaurant, that's a classic date location.
Isn't that a bit boring though?
So, a theme park.
But you hate roller coasters.
Oh, what if you go to a bookshop and like choose a book for each other and have a cute little reading date?
Isaac, that's your dream date, not Elle's. Charlie, what do you and Nick do for dates?
I mean, we went to the beach.
Oh, basic. What else?
I've been grounded and he's got exams, so I've barely seen him outside of school. I've been stuck at home doing my history coursework.
Oh my God, you're all useless.
Tao, you're really overthinking this.
I'm not. If this date doesn't work out, then I lose my best friend in the whole world. What about if we went to IKEA, like in 500 Days of Summer?
Tao.
I love that moment so much. I think that's like the cutest thing ever. Isaac's dream day is like super, super cute. Like picking books for each other and then having like a reading day. It just sounds so lovely. Like that would be right up my street.
I've actually had that date fairly recently with my partner.
I love that.
We went to Edinburgh and went to all the independent bookshops, and it was really,
Yeah.
really lovely.
Oh, that sounds so good. It sounds so good. I love how supportive Charlie and Isaac are being. They could have easily dismissed Tao, like he really is overthinking his date with Elle.
Oh yeah, he's putting a lot of pressure on himself to make it perfect. And but I think it is that thing of, it's not just asking someone out on a date, and if it doesn't go well, it's fine. It is that I'll lose my best friend.
Yeah.
Like,
Oh, I know. It must be so hard, especially because they're so close and he went through this whole story arc last season where he felt like he was losing Elle and their whole friendship group was falling apart. So I kind of understand, I do kind of get it. But yeah, super
yeah,
cute. Love
definitely.
that moment. Really good comedy gold. We cut to the next scene now. It's one that you picked, Bryony. It's the end of the rugby scene, and Nick and Charlie and the rugby lads have been asked to collect some of the equipment, I guess. It's left over, and we get this really cute little leaf moment. The Heartstopper leaves drift across the screen as Nick is like glancing at Charlie. But his longing is interrupted by Otis and the other rugby lads. Should we listen in to what they had to say?
Yeah.
Christian, Nick, collect the cones. Charlie, can you collect the rugby balls, please? Good season, thank you. Well done, you guys.
Hey, did you hear we're having an end of GCSE party in the woods next week?
Yeah, it's gonna be wild. And you guys should come.
Yeah, cool, maybe.
Nick, man, we're not friends with Harry and them lot anymore.
Yeah, we're sorry about what happened at the cinema.
We should have spoken up.
Thanks.
I do know you're not like Harry. Guess it took me a while to realise what a dick he is as well.
I seriously don't blame you for fighting him. I know you and Charlie are really good mates.
Yeah. Yeah.
What'd you say that for?
Why did you pick that moment?
I think that moment because I think it shows that Nick's friends are really trying to make an effort, and
Yeah.
they're trying to take accountability. But I also just loved the whole good mates moment because we've all, well, I don't know if we've all, but a lot of us have had like a friend and
Yeah.
actually we're hiding all those feelings and emotions and things behind it. So I just love that cut scene of, yeah, they're good mates. And because we've had that experience where we're like, we're just friends. And actually
Yeah.
it's not, you're all kissing and in love and great.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I love that you said that about Otis and the rest of the rugby lads. I think like in the I think it was I don't know if it was episode one or episode two where Charlie rejoins the rugby team and Otis is like really excited to see him back. So they definitely are making such a big effort and I love it. It's really, really cute. But he is putting a lot of pressure on himself. Coming out is hard and Nick is putting pressure on himself to come out this in the first few episodes of the season.
Yeah, definitely. And I think his friends are trying to create that safe space so that he can talk more about his relationship with Charlie. And they know something's going on, because even after that scene and Nick kind of walks away, they're like, well, why did you say that? So they clearly know something is going on, and they're wanting to create that safe space for him. But obviously there's been so much negativity and homophobia previous to that that it's hard to feel safe. So yeah, I think it's interesting kind of how friendships change, especially when you're nervous about coming out based on how safe you feel around that person. And that having friendships where people are letting you know, like, it's okay to be who you are so important.
Oh, I love that you say that. That's so nice. And you're right. That's exactly what they're trying to do, isn't it? Like, and even the fact that whenever they invite Nick and Charlie to the party, they include both of them. Like, they aren't just inviting Nick, they're inviting the couple. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I thought that was a really nice touch too.
It was. Yeah, because they specifically said that you can both come. It wasn't you can come and you can bring Charlie if you want. It was a specific invitation for both of them to be involved. And as you said in the previous episode, they were excited for Charlie to be back involved with the group. So it's clear that they like both of Nick and Charlie, and they want them to feel safe and included in that space.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. We stick with Nick and Charlie and see that they find a moment in the equipment store where Charlie reassures Nick that there is no deadline to come out, even though Nick feels all this pressure. And Coach Singh walks in and finds them in an intimate moment sharing a kiss. It's a fairly iconic moment that's taken straight from the graphic novels. It's super cute. And after that, Coach Singh catches up with Nick in her office. Should we have a listen to their conversation?
Yeah, that'd be great.
You wanted to see me?
Come sit down, Nick. I appointed you captain last year because you were the only one who can make these boys into a team. But this term, I've sensed some distance has grown between you and most of the lads. I don't want to make any assumptions, but I assume this has something to do with it.
I guess so.
If any of the lads say anything out of line, you tell me immediately, all right?
Yeah. Yeah, I will.
When I was at uni, things were pretty bad. That was in women's rugby. Lots of lesbians in women's rugby. That's how I met my wife. I remember what it was like, telling all my friends. Some took it better than others.
None of the guys know about me, so,
Well, you don't owe them that information, okay?
Thank you. Nice.
And maybe keep the kissing outside of team practice.
I really love that moment. Really, really love it. I can't get enough of Coach Singh, played by Chetna Pandya. I hope I said that right. I'm sorry if I didn't. Why did you pick that moment, Bryony?
I just think that moment shows how important queer representation in teachers is, and actually having someone that you feel comfortable talking to about those experiences. And obviously it was a bit of a forced conversation because she caught them, but creating again that safe space. And I think it's a very vulnerable moment for teachers to share bits about their lives, particularly because there's that like professional dynamic with your learners, and also because we're still coming out of that era of Section 28 where teachers were discouraged from talking about their relationships, their identity. And so I feel like having a show where there is a teacher having conversations about themselves, saying, you know, I understand, I'm there for you, I've gone through it, it's so important for young people to have that, because it might be the only like adult in their life that they can connect to on that topic.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think you highlighted as well, or that scene highlights, that she had like a picture of her wife on her desk. And again, that is something that a lot of people 10 years ago, 15 years ago as teachers didn't feel like they could do. So the fact that there's that representation and they can just share their families and their lives as everyone else can, it's amazing.
It is. It's so lovely. And it's such a poignant reminder too that actually in the world today, there are places where teachers still can't do that. Like in very developed nations, like in parts of the United States, where queer teachers aren't allowed to put pictures of their partners on their desks or share stories in the way that Coach Thing did. It's just totally mind-boggling that things like that in a very developed Western nation are still allowed to happen, that the people are still allowed to be repressed in that way. It's very sad.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, for young people, when they can't have these conversations with anyone, there is that like pressure that builds up, and we see it a lot in Nick this episode, that kind of pressure of an isolation and not being able to talk about things. And actually having those conversations with teachers, you know, you're safe, you know that they have a duty of care to you as a young person, so it's not like, you know, it's a parent or a friend who there's like a different relationship dynamic going on, and having that conversation creates that space where like at least there's someone I know will listen to me, that will provide that space. And she immediately provided support. It wasn't, she wasn't berating Nick for not being a team leader. It was immediate, like, has the boy said anything? You know, we'll have no tolerance for that.
Oh, it's so nice. I know it is. It's a really great moment. And in a way, it's great now that Nick has that teacher in school that he can turn to in the same way that Charlie does with Mr. J, which is another really nice little touch too. So yeah, definitely a highlight in this episode. It was actually in our top moments of season 2. If you haven't listened to that episode, you can head back and take a listen. It was me and Emma and Ellie. It's a really good episode. It gets very emotional in places. But it is definitely worth a listen. So head back if you haven't listened to that one yet. It's definitely worth a listen. For our next moment, we head to Truham's library. I used to love the school library back in my day, but there was absolutely no chance, like there was no chance of there being any queer literature. Like I was in school in the 1990s, probably like the late 1990s, and right in the middle of Section 28, where people weren't allowed to talk about queer issues at all. I really hope that things like this pride display actually happen in school these days.
Oh, it absolutely does. We work with schools all across Scotland, and loads of them have pride displays with the same books that were shown.
Really?
So we have a book list that we recommend to.
I love it.
Yeah, I know, and it's great because we have a book list we recommend to schools, and it includes books that were on that display, like George, like I Wish You All the Best, like My Shadow is Pink. And loads of schools have these books now and have like displays so that they're easily accessible. Some of the schools I work with have got like rainbow stickers on the like binders of the books that are LGBTQ representative.
Very good.
So that young people can find them. Actually at a school today who delivered a lesson around about the book Every Family is Different, and they were talking about different family dynamics, which includes two mums, two dads, young people that are looked after by grandparents, and the fact that schools are having these conversations and it's not just the nuclear family that's represented is great.
Oh, it's so special. Like, I love that. I love that you get to have those experiences. That must have been so much fun. That must have been great. What age were the kids?
So this was a primary school. They were delivering it with P6s and P7s.
Oh, that's so great. My son is in P7. My son's in P7. Great. And I know he would love that kind of thing. Like he would eat that up. Like he would love that.
Yeah, definitely. Also, there was a secondary school in the north of Scotland that for a lesson around about Section 28, they actually covered their queer books that were available in the library in brown paper just for the day that the lesson was being delivered, and they used that as like a physical viewpoint of the censorship that happened at the time and actually the pressure of identity. And they spoke to the young people about what books are covered, what does this show about the information that wasn't wanted to be shared, and how do you think this impacted queer people at the time?
That's such a worthwhile lesson. Like, I feel like I would sign up to do that class today.
it was very visual.
So they sent interesting.
It was very interesting. They sent pictures of the books covered up, and it was such like that's a very clear censorship there.
Yeah, for sure. That's so good. You've got such a great job. I'm really jealous.
I think I told you
that before too. Like, I'm so jealous. I wish I could do that. Anyway, this is a really cute moment. We get treated to like three little mini scenes in one. Like, I love how they've kind of done that in this season. There are a few moments where you get like this panning camera shot and you get little snippets of conversation as the camera pans around. And this is a really, really great moment like that. The first thing that we get is Tao putting Google to good use, and then we get a really cute Nick and Charlie moment and a James and Isaac moment. Let's have a listen.
I don't want to do this anymore.
It's your last exam. Yeah. You're nearly done.
No.
And then it's basically the Paris trip. We get to spend every day together for the whole thing.
Okay, that does sound pretty good.
See? Let's go over ionic compounds.
You spent so much time helping me. What about your history coursework? I haven't helped you with that at all.
It's fine. It's done.
You are amazing.
James, isn't it your last exam today as well?
Yep. I should probably be doing some last-minute revision right now, but this is more fun. Oh, have you read this one?
Of course I've read that one.
It's one of my favorites.
It's such a cute little moment. So we got to hear Nick and Charlie first. Charlie supporting Nick with his exam revision, but it's kind of hard to hear Charlie not be very honest with Nick about where he is with his own coursework.
Yeah, I think it's quite difficult because I think Charlie wants to be that perfect partner and actually doesn't reveal how much he's struggling, both internally,
right,
but also just with the pressures of the relationship and friendships and everything else going on. So I think it's about creating that barrier and that wall of, well, everything's fine. And that separates him from Nick in a little way.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And we see how that kind of manifests itself throughout the season. But yeah, it was kind of one of the first moments, actually, where we get a sense that everything isn't okay with Charlie, that he isn't being fully honest with Nick.
Yeah, and I think the fact that he can lie, you know, convincingly and easily, that kind of foreshadows. He talks about the eating disorder later on in the season, how it's easy to lie and hide things, and that's something that Charlie has had to do for a lot of his time at school, and being able to get good at hiding things. So it's quite difficult in that moment because you think about how easily Charlie can lie and how that's a skill he's developed.
That's right. Absolutely. 100%. We get that really lovely moment then with James and Isaac too. I love the story arc so much. So cute. This little 10 seconds is just really great. It's great to get to know James a bit this season. I hope we see more of him as this story arc develops.
Yeah, definitely. I love James's character. I think he's a great character. And I love the foreshadowing in that scene as well, because the top book on the display is like an
That's
ace
right.
representation book.
Yes.
So it really That's foreshadows right. like Isaac's journey into his identity as well.
For sure, for sure. And then of course we have Tao. Tao doesn't have much dialogue. He doesn't actually have any dialogue in this scene. So we kind of have to describe it. So Tao is on the computer in the library Googling how to, I guess it's like dating advice, like for your first date. It was a really funny moment.
Yeah, it was really funny. I think it took me back to like MSN days, when you were like on MSN trying to talk to your crush, and thinking about like things to say and like Googling things to say. It was really
Oh my God, like, remember funny. MSN? Do we need to explain what MSN is?
So for any of the younger members of this audience, MSN was like messaging platform in the early 2000s.
before we had mobile phones and cell phones, we had to like message people on computers through these messaging apps. It's
and,
so funny.
And nudge them when they're not replying, which would vibrate your computer screen.
Yeah, that's right. It's so right. Oh my goodness. I've got some of Tao's dating hacks. So this is from the article that Tao was reading on the screen. So he has to be big-hearted but not big-headed, confident but not cocky, and choose activities or topics of conversation that prioritize what they will enjoy. Oh, that's a bit of a foreshadowing of what he does. Picks Elle's favorite movie to go and watch. Cheesy pickup lines. Are you a magician, Bryony? Because whenever I look at you, everyone else disappears. So bad. It's so bad.
It is really bad. And all of that is foreshadowing for their date as well, because I feel like he takes on so much of that online advice, and the internet is not the place that you go to for dating advice.
Not always.
It can be okay, but there's so much information out there and not a lot of it is good. So
you definitely need to have your filter well tuned in before you take dating advice from Google. Yeah, really funny. It's a really funny moment. Should we move on to our next bit?
Yeah, that'd be great.
The next moment is one that I picked. It's whenever like we cut to the group of friends finishing school. First, we see at Trium that the boys are all talking about burning their GCSE notes in a bonfire. It's like such a school kid thing to do. I love it. Let's have a listen.
I'm free.
I'm not grounded anymore.
Yo, unless you're staying for the meeting about the parish trip, can you all go home now? Please, please leave.
How was your exam?
It was good.
Je m'appelle.
Ça va?
Paris is basically like a 5-day long sleepover.
You're going to be so annoyed with me after that.
Aww. I love you because of how annoying you are.
I mean, I didn't mean that in an I love you way. That was just a casual I love you. That's not me asking you to say it back or anything. Yeah.
Super awkward. A super awkward moment between Tara and Darcy. Always yeah. Awkward.
I think that was one of the most awkward scenes of the entire show. Me and my partner were just watching it, like, cringing.
You know, definitely, 100%, yeah. One of the great things I love about Heartstopper is that we get to see moments like this that happen in all relationships. Well, maybe not all relationships, but they do happen. But we get to see it in a queer context, which we hardly ever get to see. These are just teenagers being teenagers, and this is one of the awkward things in teenage relationships.
Yeah, I think it shows the complexity of the relationship. And I think as well, kind of why open communication is so important, because obviously Tara doesn't understand Darcy's reservation, and to her it just seems like she doesn't love her back, but actually there's so much going on with Darcy at the time.
Yeah, that's so true. We know that Darcy's story arc gets quite complicated towards the end of the season. We get like a fuller understanding of what's happening, but again in this episode we're given a couple of little indicators that something isn't quite right, and this is one of them for sure.
Yeah, I think this is a big indicator that something isn't right there in terms of their relationship. And how Darcy's feeling was kind of a foreshadowing of Darcy's experiences, and actually that's it gives an indication that she wasn't feeling 100%, but actually at the time we don't understand why, and neither does Tara. And I'm glad that they actually didn't provide that context, and we were confused by why she was acting like that, because it gives the audience an insight into Tara's feelings at that time, because we were like, well, what's happening? What's going on?
Yes, definitely, definitely. I do like it. It was a really nice moment. It was just, it kind of summed up all those things. Nice in an awkward way. I don't mean like it's nice to watch people squirm, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but these things do happen in relationships, and they happen in, straight relationships, they happen in queer relationships. And actually, I think it's good to have these moments where it's not about the fact that it's a queer relationship. It's just these things happen in relationships. Sometimes people say, I love you, and it's not reciprocated, and it's always really uncomfortable and awkward.
Yeah, I know. As you get older, you just kind of become more guarded. You get better at not saying it by mistake, you know what I mean, or accidentally, or doing it in an unplanned way. But anyway,
yeah,
I wonder why it is so awkward to tell somebody that you love them, you know what I mean? Like, why is that? Are we all just so precious that we don't want to open ourselves up to that vulnerability of not being loved back, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It is that like fear of rejection and fear of not being loved back. And I think as a society we put so much emphasis on what those three words really mean.
That's right.
That they become huge words to say to someone.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely funny. Okay. The next moment we cut to is that meeting about the Paris trip. I picked this moment. I really liked it for a couple of reasons. I was sad that the parents had been cut from it. In the book, the parents are in this scene. I guess the show has a budget and they can't afford all those extra actors to be gathered just for a couple of minutes. Let's have a listen to the meeting anyway, and then we'll chat after.
Hey, Isaac.
Oh, hi, James.
I was just thinking, did you want to come to that end of exams party tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
And all your friends should come too, obviously.
Sweet.
Thank you very much.
See you there. Bye, Isaac. Bye.
Oh my god, Isaac, is that
I could come out at the party to some of the rugby guys, so if it goes badly, we could just leave.
Okay, everyone, can we all quieten down a little bit, please?
Everyone.
Quiet!
Okay, thank you, Mr. Farouk. Welcome, everyone. I hope you're all excited about our Parisian adventure.
Yes.
So, we'll now ask you to get into groups of four, who will be the people you share hotel rooms with.
And we've been told to inform you that boys and girls cannot share rooms.
Oh, dear. Oh, no.
Yeah, we know. Heartbreaking, isn't it?
So funny. Mr. Furk is great. I love it. I think Mr. Furk is another favorite new addition. All of the new characters are favorites of mine, of course. But I really love Mr. Furk. Mr. Jay is so different. Like, the two teachers are so different to each other. It's startling. Startling. Do teachers like Mr. Furk exist?
Oh, absolutely. And I always think they're the teachers that you're absolutely terrified of, but actually, yeah, they're like the most fun teachers to be around. But yeah, there's many a Mr. Farouk out there teaching right at this moment. Yeah. So it's great to see that representation of different types of teachers and different approaches as well.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. This is one of my favorite moments. I picked it because I love Imogen. Like, Imogen is definitely one of my favorite characters. And this is a tough moment for her, where her friendship group is dominated by the rugby lads. And now she has to find other pupils from Higgs to share a room with. And she just looks really lost and very vulnerable. And I just wanted to give her a big hug. Just really, yeah, I had a lot of empathy for her.
Yeah, me too. Because she does look so lost. She's like looking around.
Yeah.
And to be like, who's my friend that's going to stay with me on this trip? And it's really heartbreaking because she clearly doesn't have a lot of close female relationships in her life. And it's like she's looking around because she wants that. She wants someone to connect with her.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And she actually verbalizes that. I don't know if it's in this episode or in the next episode where Nick forewarns her about Ben, and she's like, oh, I've got hardly any friends, and he's really nice to me. And it's like, oh, my heart bleeds for her. Anyway.
Yeah, I like seeing a lot of Imogen's vulnerability in this season, though, and just like her journey to like finding a friendship group that makes her feel comfortable.
Because yeah,
I think that's
right.
Such an important part of like being a teenager is being around your friends and finding that community. And actually, at the start of the season, she doesn't have a community, and by then she does.
Oh, it's so true. I do. I love the story arc. I love her story arc in this season. It's really, really, really good. And you get a taste of that, like, right at the start, at the sleepover, whenever she comments about how nice everyone is. And, you know, it's like, oh, everybody deserves to have friends, like Charlie's group of friends, you know?
Yeah, ones that you really feel included and, you know, safe with. And I think she expresses so many times that she wants that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I love it. It's really good. I picked the next moment too, right after the Paris trip meeting. We get this really hilarious moment with Tao, which fans have dubbed his proposal, Tao's proposal. As the gangs leave the Paris trip, Tao's standing directly opposite the doors with like this huge bunch of flowers in a totally new wardrobe with dark glasses and his new haircut. It's hilarious. Let's have a listen.
What the hell?
Hi. These are for you, for finishing your GCSEs.
What's happening right now?
Elle, I like you, romantically. And I was wondering if you wanted to go on a date. Tonight.
You like me?
Yeah. I guess I was sort of hoping. I've been sort of wondering if you like me back.
Dosh! Tossy. Well, yeah.
So, tonight, I thought maybe we could go to the cinema.
Okay.
He didn't give her much notice. Like, it's already late afternoon and they're going to the cinema tonight. I'd have been like, maybe next week.
Definitely. I know you got no time to prepare. She probably felt really blindsided.
Yeah, for sure. This moment has really grown on me. Like, at first, I mooned about this moment because I just it didn't feel very realistic. But the more I see it, the more I love it. It's so ridiculous. And it's actually really funny and really cute. Tao puts himself in this vulnerable place to ask her out on a date. He makes it all showy and like it's hilarious. It's really good.
It's really good. I actually think it is quite realistic in terms of the amount of pressure you put to ask people out, especially when you're in school and you get like
Yeah,
someone
okay.
to go up to your friend and then ask them out for you and like do all that kind of stuff. And when Darcy was like, "A da," I was like, "That's such a teenage girl thing to
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But it is a very vulnerable position that Tao put himself in. And I think it's a very, very sweet scene. And yeah, it was just a lovely scene
It is.
that was there.
It is super sweet. I thought of how it was shot was really interesting. Behind L, you see the group of friends, but they've been split into two. Isaac and Charlie is on L's left, Tao's right, and then on the other side are the new friendship groups. So, are the new friends to the group. You've got Nick and Tara and Darcy and the other friends that she's made. So it's almost like on one side you've got the original friendship group, and on the other side are new friends, which is kind of how Tao feels a little bit in this episode, where she's being pulled away by new friends, although it isn't Nick and Tara and Darcy, it's Sahar, not Sahar, it's Naomi and Felix, the two new characters. But I thought that was really interesting, really interesting. And it kind of reminded me of the rugby match scene where Charlie's on the ground and Nick is standing in the middle of the shot with his friends on one side and Charlie's friendship group on the other side. Like, this is a decision that he's making. Yeah, it kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's a visual representation of the fact that they are kind of choosing to move away from friendship and go into something more romantic,
Yes, that's
and
right.
how difficult that choice can be.
Oh, for sure. That's spot on. That's so right. That's so right. Very good. Should we move on to our next bit? For the next bit, we cut to the start of the bonfire party. So we join Nick and Charlie and Tara and Sahar as they arrive to the party. Let's have a listen.
This definitely isn't legal, is it?
Nope. Darcy's not replying to my messages. I'm gonna go find her.
Isaac! Hey, did you want a drink? Not alcohol. I mean, there is alcohol if you want it, but if you don't, that's cool too.
Yeah, sure.
Come on then.
We're running.
Look after him or you die.
Tori. Okay. What's up?
I'm fine. Just a headache.
We can leave if you want.
I'm fine. I promise.
Another really cute Isaac and James moment. We get so much of Isaac and James in this episode. It's very special.
I know. I love how awkward James is around Isaac. It's so sweet.
It really is. It's very cute. It's very cute for sure. Do you think this kind of Arrowace representation or the story arc that Isaac's going on, like it still feels very rare in terms of how often we see it represented in media like TVs and movies and stuff? It feels pretty important.
Yeah, I think it's really important to have a character who is Arrowace within the show and just in media in general, because
Yeah.
even a lot of LGBT lessons that are out there, or books or resources, a lot of it is around about the LGBT community, and there is not a lot of representation for Arrow and Ace people in
Yeah.
general, in resources and support, in lessons and media. I feel like we're just now getting to a place where we've got lots of resources to teach about lesbian, gay, bisexual, and to a certain degree trans people as well,
For
even though
sure.
that representation could be better. But actually the Aero and Ace community don't have a lot of representation within those resources.
Definitely. And even just how Alice has approached the storytelling in this story arc between Isaac and James, it's like we get to see Isaac go on this really great journey of discovery where James shows this romantic interest and he isn't really sure about what the appropriate response is for that. And we get to see this really great journey where he learns, first of all, that he maybe doesn't feel that way about James and then discovers what Arrowace is. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it is a great journey. And I think he likes spending time with James and he has so much in common with James. And I think that makes that journey even more confusing for Isaac. He's like, well, I like this person and I like spending time with them. And, you know, that's how Nick and Charlie are and that's how Kyle and Darcy are. So that's how I should be too. So I think that can be quite confusing because it's not like he dislikes James. He likes being around him.
Yeah, exactly. It's like James almost is the way the character has been written almost to be Isaac's perfect boyfriend. Like he's really, he's really handsome. He works in a bookshop. They go on like a book date where they meet in James's bookshop. And, you know, it's like they're made for each other. And actually Isaac starts to understand or starts to realize that he doesn't feel that way about James, you know?
Yeah, I really hope that in the next season, now that Isaac is starting to understand his identity, he can have that conversation with James around about like more deeply, because I know that he does have it within the series, but more deeply about identifying as asexual or aromantic and actually like still maintaining a really close friendship with James. It would be really nice to see that.
Oh, I can't wait. It's actually, it's one of the things I'm most excited about in season three is how Isaac and James, how their story arc develops, in particular Isaac, of course, but to see how that works with their friendship and everything else, I can't wait. Anyway, we're going to stick with the arrival at the party. This time we get a moment between Tara and Sahar and Charlie and Nick.
Okay, well, just ask me for a lift next time. My mum can pick you up, it's really not a problem. Okay, yeah. Text you later. I don't know why she didn't just ask.
Maybe she was just embarrassed.
Darcy's the most confident person I know. Literally nothing embarrasses her.
This is my duty as boyfriend.
Stop it, please.
I'm just taking adorable pictures. Okay,
well,
no, you
can't. No, okay, I will tickle you.
Stop. Okay, you win. You win.
Are you sure you want to come out to the rugby boys tonight?
If you're not feeling well.
I'm fine. I can do this.
Just think about us being out as a couple in Paris, holding hands in the Louvre, kissing in front of the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
That's a really nice moment. We get two little clips there. The first is Tara and Sahar. I really love Sahar as a new character. I think she brings a lot to the show. She's great. And we get more of a sense of something not being quite right with Darcy as the story arc develops.
Yeah, I think it's quite clear that something's building there because we obviously have the scene where she didn't say, I love you. And now we have her not coming to the bonfire. So it's starting to kind of build that something is not quite right with Darcy.
But also
the fact that Darcy feels like she has to hide it. And I found in that recording, I actually found it quite painful, I guess is the word, when Tara was saying, oh, Darcy's the most confident person I know. Nothing embarrasses her. But that's exactly why Darcy feels like she can't talk to Tara about this, because she's like, well, I need to be the confident one, the one that, you know, isn't ashamed of who I am, because that's who you see me as. And we see that later in the season. And actually, when you listen back to that scene, knowing the information that, you know, at the end of the season, it's quite difficult to hear that scene because you're like, oh, that's why she feels like she can't talk to her about it.
Oh, definitely. It's so true. And often the people that do put on that very brave and very confident outer shell are the people inside maybe do need a bit of support and a bit of help and really want to open up about things, you know. So you're right. You're absolutely right. I guess it's just one of the complicated things about teenage relationships is being able to open up appropriately about things that are happening in your life and sharing in those experiences just to get that support, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like particularly in queer relationships, if you don't have queer adults in your life to support you through it, you're kind of navigating how to respond in those relationships to complicated situations by yourself with no one to really teach you how to communicate openly, or that having conversations about your feelings honestly is ultimately the best decision.
Definitely.
No one's kind of giving you those messages.
Oh, you're so right. That's so true. It's hard being a queer young person. Like, if you don't have somebody that you can talk to about these things, then you just end up keeping it all inside, don't you?
Yeah, which Darcy doesn't, because obviously her home situation is not great, and so she probably feels very isolated and like, well, I don't know how to communicate about any of this.
Yeah, that's true, because in a way it's like, because she's so out and confident around Tara, she doesn't know how to let her know almost that she's not out at home with her mum.
Yeah.
I didn't want to use the word shame, but maybe that is. Maybe Darcy feels a little bit ashamed that she isn't out to her mum.
Yeah. Or I feel like maybe she feels guilt that she has presented a certain version of herself to Tara.
Yes, that could be it too.
But that actually that's not the reality. And she's like, well, you know, this is how I'm perceived now. So if I try and tell the truth, am I going to be viewed as a liar?
Oh, that's so true. That's a totally different perspective. Yeah, that's so true. And I think that that maybe is how she feels, because later on in the season, she comments, I think she makes a comment about how Tara loves her because she's this strong and confident young person. And she's scared that if Tara finds out that she's not that, then she'll stop loving her. Oh, it's so sad. Yeah. That's so sad.
And that is such a complex feeling to feel at such a young age. So no wonder she can't communicate about it, because that, like, that's complicated at any age.
Oh my, yeah, it definitely is. Oh, it's, yeah, it definitely is. Oh, poor Darcy. I just want to give her a big hug. Poor Darcy. We're going to head off now to join Tao and Elle at the cinema. So we're heading off to see Tao and Elle at the cinema, where they go to see Moonrise Kingdom, Elle's favorite movie. Let's have a listen to how the date starts.
Hiya.
Hi. Two tickets for Tao Su?
What are we seeing?
It's a surprise.
So that's two tickets for Moonrise Kingdom at 7:15.
Or not.
That's my favourite movie.
I know.
But you hate that movie.
Yeah, but I want to make this your dream date. Thanks. So screen two. Follow me. You look really nice, by the way.
Thanks. Why did you cut your hair?
Well, it just looks better like this, doesn't it?
But you always liked it long. I hope you didn't cut it for me.
Kind of an awkward start to their little date.
Very awkward start to the date, both between the surprise being ruined and then also her comment about
his hair. I know, his hair looks so much better. Like, no offense, I really like his new hairstyle.
I really liked the old hairstyle.
I like them both, but like that, I don't know. The new Tao is stunning. The old Tao is stunning too, but yeah, his new hair really suits him, I think.
Yeah, I think he does kind of reveal that, oh, it just looks better, but it's like, well, to who?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what Elle's trying to get at. It's like, well, if you like your hair long, though, like, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of is a theme throughout their day.
Yeah, it really is. Let's have a listen to how their date ends.
I just think that's probably Wes Anderson's least technically good movie from, like, a story perspective. I mean, it all hinges on the romance between the two kids, which is so unbelievable anyway, because they meet and fall in love immediately. Mm. And, like, they're kids, so obviously it's not going to last long term.
You really shouldn't have picked that movie.
It's not my fave, but you love it, so...
But if we're going on a date, we should do something we both enjoy. My mum should be here in, like, 5 minutes. Still want to go to this party?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for asking me out on a date.
Thanks for saying yes.
I feel kind of sorry for Tao. I have to be honest, I'm not a fan of this point in their story arc, I don't think. But yeah, I feel a bit sorry for him. I think I was being a little hard on him.
I think that she is, but I kind of understand why, because, you know, he comes to the state, he looks completely different.
Yeah.
And then he And I guess then he picks a movie that he thinks she'd like, which is sweet.
It is. But it's then, so sweet. It's like he took her to see his favorite movie.
But then he sits and criticizes it and points out all the things that are wrong with it. And when I was watching it back, I think the thing that put Elle on the defensive, was like, you really shouldn't have picked that movie, was that he says, oh, well, they're kids, so obviously it's not going to last.
Yeah.
And I think that Elle maybe feels like Tao was saying, well, because they are young,
okay,
that their romance is not going to be long term, and was upset by that statement.
You might be right. You might be right. Although her comment that Tao isn't being himself, he's trying to be a different person, like the fact that he comes out and is like giving this editorial critique of the movie, like that's such a Tao thing to do. Like that is 100% the real Tao. You know what I mean? Like that is
the Tao thing to do.
You know?
But I don't know how I would feel if I got asked out on a date and they're like, I'm taking you to see your favorite movie. And I would be like, oh, great.
Yeah.
And then they just talked about all the things that were wrong with it. I'd be like, okay, well,
yeah.
You know, I'd feel uncomfortable too.
Oh, I get it. I totally do. If it was me and I was in Elle's shoes, I would be like, well, maybe next time we can go and see a movie that you like, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I get it. I get it. Oh, tough though. It's tough. It was super awkward. Like they had that whole awkward handhold moment during the movie, and the whole thing was just super awkward.
It was so awkward. And I think Elle, I feel like in these scenes, she's feeling like she just wants Tao to realize that Elle likes him for who he is as like a real genuine person.
Yeah.
And the fact that he can't understand that he like she likes him for him is frustrating to her.
Yeah. Should we follow them on? Let's follow them to the bonfire party, and we'll see how that shapes up.
I didn't know you invited them.
Yeah, they're my friends. What?
I don't understand what I did wrong tonight.
It's like you were trying to be a completely different person.
You're the one who's completely different. You've gone off with your new friends and have forgotten I exist completely.
You're the one who said we'd always put our friendship first. You promised.
Well, I guess romance does ruin friendship.
Per Tao and per Elle. Doesn't end in a pretty way. I feel bad for Tao and for Elle.
Yeah, I think they're both struggling to communicate how they feel about it. Again, that's a very normal thing for teenagers.
Yeah.
I feel like she should have told him, as it was established that it was a date, she should have told him that once they get to the bonfire, she's going to see Felix and Naomi, and so that he wasn't blindsided by that.
No, for sure. Especially because of his story arc last season, where he felt that loss, that sense of loss around Elle going to Higgs, and now Elle's going off to art college, and he feels that sense of loss again, and she has new friends and everything else, you know. So I totally get why he was triggered by seeing them.
Definitely. I think that comes down to kind of Tao's feelings and insecurities there about how important his friends are to him, which he talks about later in the season. So I think that's kind of playing out there. And it's not just about Elle's actions, but it's also about that struggle that Tao has with losing people.
That's exactly it. That's 100% right, actually, is that this moment, the fight happens because of how Tao feels rather than anything else that's happened on the date.
Yeah, definitely. And then that's very confusing for both Elle and for Tao. And it's such a shame because it had the potential to be such like a fun, cute date. But actually, I quite like that they've used this to see that, you know, dates are sometimes awkward and we navigate through things as teenagers and as young people that are uncomfortable. And sometimes that's just the way it is. And, you know, we can't help that. It's uncomfortable sometimes, and sometimes you don't do the best thing or say the best thing in that moment.
Yeah, for sure. And I get like I was chatting about it with a friend last night, and he was like, but you have to have like all this tension and drama before you get the fairy tale ending in Paris. Like this has to happen so that the fairy tale ending can happen. So I get that that's how storytelling works too. I just wanted them to have like a fairy tale experience, you know what I mean? And it just, part of me wonders, is the way that this story arc has been written in line with who Elle is and who Tao is as characters, the characters that we met in season one? But I guess that's part of them growing up and changing as teenagers, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think it shows that change in who they are, because I don't necessarily think the characters in season one would have had that uncomfortable an experience.
Yeah.
But they're both trying to navigate who they are who they want to be as they grow up and what their identity is, not in terms of an LGBTQ plus identity, but in terms of who are they, what are their interests, and, you know, who are their friends, and trying to navigate all of that, as well as navigate moving from a friendship to a romantic relationship, which is sometimes so messy, as we see here.
It definitely is. It definitely is. I'm glad that they had some friends there to support them. Let's listen to that.
How'd it go?
Bad.
Maybe he was just nervous.
I'm fundamentally unlikable.
Don't say that, Tao.
He was probably just trying to impress you.
I liked the old Tao.
I try too hard, and I talk too much. I ruin everything.
Tao, please don't say that. I've liked him for so long, and it just hurts. I don't want to feel like this anymore.
Come here.
Aw, sad. Sad. But anyway, could it have ended differently? Probably, but it's hard.
Probably. If you, once you learn those communication skills as an adult.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. Yeah, I think they're both being a little hard on each other, you know, on themselves and on each other, you know.
Oh, Tao is so hard on himself. It's so heartbreaking because you can tell a lot of his insecurities about himself are coming out there.
Yeah.
And it's really hard because, you know, a lot of us have negative thoughts about ourselves. But just hearing them said out loud is quite like a visceral reaction. And I think as well, some of the things that he points out, like I talk too much, those are things that Elle loves about him, that he's passionate, that he's interesting, that he's got lots to say. She likes that about him. And the fact that he's picking that out as a reason of why the date wasn't successful, it's hard because that is something that she loves about him so much.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Anyway, we're going to stick at the bonfire party, as ridiculous as it is. Do they have bonfire parties in Scotland?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do they really? Oh my God, I'm like, this is so ridiculous. This would never happen in Northern Ireland.
No, we absolutely have bonfire parties, and like burning of the exam papers, burning of your exam revision was something that I did a lot in during my hires. We'd all go out to a woods, not like an organized bonfire party in the way this was, but it was more like a big campfire. We all just chucked things in and camped for the night. It was great.
Well, I'm glad it's authentically written. In Northern Ireland, it's like the riot squad would turn up and they would totally shut that shit down. You know what I mean? Like, it would never happen in a million years. But anyway, maybe it does happen these days and I'm just too old to realize. So we pick up with the next scene. This is Nick's story arc. So we pick back up with Nick's story arc in this scene with Tori, where he's feeling a little bit unwell. I quite like this moment. Throughout this season, we get these little individual scenes where one character kind of speaks the thoughts of another character. And in this moment, Tori is telling Nick what he's telling himself. Like, these are Nick's thoughts being told him by Tori. So let's have a listen to this moment.
Charlie.
Hi.
Sorry.
Where's Charlie?
I lost him. Sorry.
You said you'd look after him. Not very good at keeping your promises, are you? You don't look well.
I'll find him. I promise.
I feel so sorry for Nick. I feel sorry for him. It's what he's been telling himself this whole season, is that he's breaking his promises to people. And now Tori's like, oh, you're not very good at keeping your promises. Just so true to Tori. Like, that's so true to her character. I feel really bad for Nick.
Yeah, I feel like Tori in this, in the whole bonfire scene is harsh, but as a great protective big sister.
Definitely.
But it's very harsh because she was like, if he gets hurt, I'll kill you or you'll die like that. And now there's this. So I think she's very good at the protective big sister, but actually it's playing into Nick's insecurities as well.
For sure. He's putting so much pressure on himself to come out and keep this promise that he thinks he made. And we really see in this scene how much it's affected him. Like, it's making him physically sick. We know that Sarah later in the episode suggests that it's sunstroke, but it's not. It's stress. Like, he's just very stressed and it's making him ill. So yeah, I feel kind of sorry for him. Another moment where somebody else tells Nick his thoughts is in the previous episode. I wish I'd brought it up at the time, but I forgot. With Ben. So it was that scene where he's put into isolation with Ben. And Ben tells him that you're just like me. He tells Nick that he's just like Ben, that he doesn't really want to come out. And of course, that's something else Nick has been telling himself a lot, especially towards the end of season one, is that he was just like Ben and he's hurting Charlie in the same way that Ben hurt Charlie, which of course we know isn't true. We move on and we pick up the next scene with Charlie. Let's have a listen whenever Nick and Charlie find each other.
What's up, Nick? Mate, you all right?
Yeah, I just needed to talk to you guys about something.
You're bisexual, so you're gonna cheat on my brother. Are you sure you're not just gay?
Aww, share with the group. Fun one, spit out.
It's fun, isn't it? Sneaking around with him.
Pick a side.
You promised you were gonna come out.
I should always want you to be gay.
You didn't like
exactly why. I didn't want to tell you.
Nick doesn't want to talk to you, Harry. Piss off.
Wait, what's his problem?
Gee, you know how funny it is.
It's such a horrible moment to listen to. Like, it's quite a painful moment to listen to. Very, very powerful for Charlie to be able to stand up to Harry in that way and to tell him to piss off the way that he did. Is like, it must have felt very empowering to do that for Charlie. It's a really big kind of milestone in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like this is the first time that I can remember anyway that we see Charlie really stick up for himself without any support against people like Harry. Obviously, we see it again later in the season during the Paris trip. Yeah. This is, I feel like, the first instance that he's like, no, actually, I've had enough of this.
Definitely.
And I can fight my own battles. But it's so hard with Nick and the kind of thoughts of how much internalized biphobia there was there.
Yeah, it was really hard. Like, that was pretty shocking. Like, the first couple of times that I watched it, although I was paying attention, I don't think I really heard all of it. And then whenever I was writing up the show notes and really focusing on what people were saying to him, like, it really painful. You know, he's experiencing a lot of guilt about not coming out, and then to have all this extra biphobia thrown in. Some of it is things that he's heard people say to him, and other things are things that he's kind of imagined or think maybe he thinks that that's what he remembers people saying. Yeah. It was difficult.
Yeah, and I think just in society, there is a lot of biphobia still. So there's probably an element of that, that even if people haven't directly said it to Nick, that actually he's hearing these messages just from society around him. Because that whole thing of pick a side or you're actually gay. I mean, I identify as bisexual, and even hearing those kind of comments, it's difficult because you do get that sometimes, less so now. There's more of an understanding than I'd say that there was 10 years ago. But yeah, there's definitely still a lot of biphobia, and that bisexuality is not a valid experience, that either you're on your way to gay or it's something that you do for attention. That's something that I still hear a lot from young people communicating their experiences about coming out as bisexual. And it's incredibly difficult because bisexual is a very valid identity that people can have their entire lives, and it's not about picking a side or things like that, which you get told. It's about, you know, I have the ability to be in love with people of multiple genders, and that's it. That's all it is. Yeah,
for sure. And it's the same with me. Like, I'm bisexual too. And like, whenever, if I have a new partner or whatever, I've been asked, like, is there like a percentage? Like, is it like 80% men and 20% women? And you know, it comes from that place of insecurity where they're genuinely worried that you're going to cheat on them. You know, there's like twice the competition, you know what I mean? Which is so silly. It doesn't, like, you can't really put a number on it like that, you know, but it's
And there's
it's
absolutely
funny.
No evidence that bisexual people cheat more often than, than heterosexual people. That is just completely not within, you know, that's not what happens. You love people and you're in very kind of relationships with them and you're committed and things like that. So it's just not a thing. But it's still that perception of there's more options, so obviously you're going to cheat.
Yeah. I'm sure that whenever it does come up, I'm sure people are being really genuine and being loving and caring and everything else in the majority of cases.
Yep, definitely. So many people are so supportive, which is great. And as I said, biphobia has definitely improved over the last 10 years, but it's still there. And I'm glad that it was represented because it's not a conversation that's often had.
Oh, I love it. It's so good. I think the way that it's been written into the show, like, it really is great writing how often Nick says he's bi actually. Like, I've said that so much, like, I'm bi actually, you know, it's totally mad. It's totally mad. It's so representative. I think it's great. Really good.
Yeah, I'm the exact same. Always having to correct people. And I actually saw kind of a discourse online of people saying, oh, well, it's annoying that Nick has to say that so often. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's annoying to have to say it. Like, if you're finding it annoying hearing it,
imagine
all the
saying
time,
it.
Imagine saying it every time someone assumes something about your relationships, either assumes you're in a, assumes you're straight because you're in a straight passing relationship, or assumes you're gay because you're in a relationship with someone of the same sex. It, like, these assumptions are made every day, and having to correct people is actually exhausting.
Oh, it really is.
And just seeing that from Nick, of like that whole, like, I'm having to say this again, but he's saying it because he wants there to be that bi representation, and it's important to have that.
Definitely. You should try having kids. Whenever you've got kids, it's so much worse, because it's like automatic, like, you're automatically straight if you've got kids, according to lots of people. But anyway, it can be really hard. Like, I have a lot of empathy for Nick about being in this position, especially because he doesn't have a huge support network around him. Like, I know he's got Charlie and his other friends and everything else, but clearly he's internalized a lot of what's happening and hasn't really been able to open up to anybody.
Oh, 100%. And I think, you know, there's great people around Nick, but I think at this point in the series, he very much views them as still, like, they're Charlie's friends.
Yes, that's right.
And maybe he doesn't feel like he's got that support network of his own friends that he's kind of organically made. And having that is so important, like, having people you can talk to about, oh, I'm feeling this way, you know, whether it's from a mental health perspective, when it's from an identity perspective. We're humans are group creatures. We're not meant to live in isolation. We're meant to communicate and talk to each other. And not being able to do that has such a detrimental impact on mental health. And it can lead to all sorts of things, like the stress that we see Nick under, but it can also lead to, you know, self-harm, guilt, shame, all these things. That can lead to very, very serious emotions, like shown here. So I think that
it's
really important to talk to people, and whether that be teachers, whether that be parents, whether that be friends, talk to somebody. A really positive picture is that in our recent Life in Scotland data, 86% of respondents said that they had a positive coming out experience when they talked to someone for the first time. So the fact that it is generally well received and positive when you do talk to people about this is really great.
Oh, that's so lovely. And of course, there's always places like your live chat service and your youth groups and things like that too exist now, which is really great as well.
Yeah, it's great how much support there is out there. And it's about finding people that you do connect with and you can have those experiences with and feel safe with.
Yeah, definitely. One of those people is Sarah. Nick's mum, she's so lovely.
I love Nick's mum.
Yeah, and we cut to a moment with Charlie and Sarah next. This is one of my favorite moments in the episode, because I love Olivia Colman, and I think she's just so lovely to Charlie. Like, she's so lovely. Let's listen to their conversation.
Oh, you're a star.
Is he okay?
Oh, he'll be fine. Just a bit of sunstroke, probably. I did tell him to put a hat on when he took Nanny out today.
Do you mind if I stay for a bit? Just to make sure he's okay.
Of course, darling. Not past your curfew, though. I don't want to get you in trouble with your parents. Nick, so lucky to have you, Charlie.
Just that little off-the-cuff remark means so much to Charlie. Like, that's such a lovely moment. Really lovely.
It's such a lovely moment. And having supportive parents and family around, it makes the world of difference. It means so much to people to have, like, just a safe space that they can go to, and you can have, like, nice conversations with those mums and dads.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of, you know, be in that family unit. And it's just lovely to see Sarah creating and actively going out of her way to make comments that to create a safe space where Charlie feels like a part of that family, which
definitely
is amazing.
Yeah, it's just so affirming to say that Nick is lucky to have Charlie. Like, I'm sure Charlie, if he was a real person, would have been, like, really touched by that, you know? Really,
yeah,
a really lovely moment. The next moment then is where we leave the episode. So this is a Nick and Charlie moment. They have a heart-to-heart in Nick's bedroom. Let's have a listen.
Maybe we should forget the coming out plan for a while.
Really?
Yeah. Let's just stay low-key in Paris, and then it'll be the summer holidays. We can just be us.
Let the sun rise.
Yeah.
You sure you're okay with it?
Yeah. Just... obviously, I want you to come out when and how you want to. And if that takes a long time, that's completely okay. But... I guess... part of me just wants everyone to know you're my boyfriend.
I really love that moment between Nick and Charlie. I thought it was really touching. A really lovely way to kind of end the episode. It's a really important message, isn't it? That it's okay to come out when and how you want to.
Yeah, it's an incredibly important message. And I also think it was really excellent how Charlie offered that kind of, you can come out when you would like to and in your own way, and that's okay. But also still really clearly communicated like his desires and like what's important for him in a way that, you know, he was like, I just want to tell everyone that you're my boyfriend. He's still making his feelings known and he's not completely eradicating. Like, will you just come out whenever you want? And like, we never have to tell anyone. He's not completely giving up his own needs and feelings in there.
Definitely. I really love that touch too. It just shows how much Charlie has grown since the Charlie we knew in season one. And I know that, you know, for us, it's been over a year, but for the characters, it's just been a few weeks. You know, this is just a few weeks after season one ended. But again, being able to communicate like that with Nick and be so open and honest about how he feels is just another sign of how healthy their relationship is and how they really do have this great bond and feel this confidence with one another and this comfort with one another, where they can be open and honest about how they feel. It's just really nice. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's a really nice moment. I think that message of it should be on your own terms is so important. And it was said by Coach Singh as well, of you don't owe anyone that information. And kind of Charlie's reiterating that here, that you don't owe anyone an explanation about your identity and it should be on your own terms. And it's so important that young people have that space where they're not forced to come out when they're not ready to, because it does put all of this unnecessary stress and it should be on their own terms. But yeah, definitely, it's really important they have that. What's quite difficult, I think, in this situation is you're seeing that affirming approach from Charlie to Nick, but actually the actor himself, Kit Connor, didn't have that freedom to come out on his own terms or felt really pressured to come out when he wasn't ready to because of the speculation around about his sexuality. And I think that must have been quite a hard scene for him to film, because he was like, this is how I would have wanted it to come out on my own terms and things like that.
Yeah.
But actually, in real life, he felt a lot of that pressure of, well, I have to tell people now and not when I'm ready to.
I think you're absolutely right. It must have been quite a difficult scene for Kit to film. And I think that one of the reasons that it comes up in the way it does in this season is because of Kit's experiences. I think whenever Alice was asked directly about it, she said that it wasn't her inspiration for Nick's story arc, but it certainly had an impact on how she wrote these moments. And you see it come up time and time again that you shouldn't come out until you're ready. And it's a really important message. But I think it was shaped by Kit's experiences, which is, again, it's just so authentic, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's so authentic. And I'm glad that Nick gets to have coming out in his own way and at his own pace, in the way that the actor Kit didn't necessarily didn't. So it's nice to see that he can kind of play that out, and you can see how coming out is meant to feel and be when there's not all that pressure attached to it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Thanks so much, Bryony. That is the end of episode 3.
It was really great to talk about some of the moments shown in that episode. It's one of my favorite episodes. So
I loved episode 3. Do you have a favorite teacher moment from season 2?
Yeah, it's not in this episode, but it's the moment where Mr. Farouk has just witnessed the kind of lovely moment between Charlie and Nick, like sneaking around on the Paris trip, and he was talking about how he never got that because like for so many of us in you know, who are maybe 20 plus, 30 plus, that's the reality of, like, because it was not talked about, we couldn't come out until we were older, so we didn't get to have those fun teenage experiences, those like fun moments of dating when you're like a teen, and like maybe feeling like left out from that experience. And I think that representation of someone who has come out later in life is so important for the viewers to see as well, and for him to get his like teenage like happy giddy relationship. It's just so lovely to see that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Mine is similar to that. It's the moment with Mr. O'Shea and Coach Singh at prom, where she's like totally coercing him into texting Mr. Farouk. It's like they're two little school kids, you know what I mean? It's so like, it's a really great moment to watch. It's
absolutely a really great moment. And I think what's special about those moments is that like the excitement of relationships doesn't go away when you leave school. Like, you still get that giddy feeling, and like teachers are people too. That's something that I want all young people to remember when they are thinking about their classroom teachers and listening to this. Teachers are people too. They have relationships, they have their own struggles. Yeah. They have like those authentic experiences and understand what it's like to feel those feelings.
So true. It's so true. Do you have any hopes and dreams for season three?
Season three, I'd really like to see kind of Charlie face his eating disorder more. It's a topic that's really close to my heart, so I think that seeing him kind of explore that and start to work towards recovery would be amazing. And I'm also really looking forward to seeing Imogen's story play out, because obviously it kind of hinted at the end of the season that she may be exploring her own identity, and I think seeing that from Imogen's perspective is going to be really interesting and really sweet. So I'm really looking forward to that as well.
Oh, I can't wait. Both of those things are going to be fantastic. I can't wait. I really can't wait to see James and Isaac's story arc too, and Isaac go on that journey of self-discovery. I think that's going to be a real pleasure to watch as well. So many moments of queer joy to look forward to in season three, and of course the rest of season two. Thanks so much for coming on, Bryony, and joining us for to talk about Heartstopper and talk about episode three. I hope you enjoyed the experience. I loved it. I really enjoyed recording this episode. You've been a great guest. The podcast would not exist without guests like yourself and organizations like LGBT Scotland, who turn up every single week and or every other week, and really do so much preparation and bring the show to life for people. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us, and thank you so much for kind of creating this space to talk about queer joy. It's so lovely.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. And thank you, listeners, if you're still with us. Thanks for sticking right to the end. I think this is going to be a slightly longer episode. Thanks for sticking right to the end. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button, follow us on Instagram, and get in touch. Let me know what you thought of season two, episode three. It would be great to hear from you. And the only thing left to do, Brian, is say goodbye to everybody.
Bye, everyone. Thanks
for listening. Bye. Today's show is produced by Shut Up World, with Bryony Mole from LGBTU Scotland and me, Jamie Wilson. Copywritten material within this episode is made available to provide criticism, comment or review, and to advance the understanding of issues which impact the queer community. For more information, please see our Fair Use and Fair Dealing statement at www.properfullongaypodcast.com.